the sudden release of an elastic road constrained by the sliding sleeve, and we will investigate the dynamic properties of a periodic system subject to a periodic arrangement of sliding sleeves. Both of these structural systems disclose the presence of configurational force, and this is a part of a sort of new research line that we are developing about configurational force on structural systems, in the attempt to exploit the framework introduced 50 years ago by the famous mechanician Ashby, who invented the concept of configurational force to explain the motion of defects within solids. So if we have a solid and we define the total potential energy at equilibrium, that is a function of the defect position, and we take the derivative with respect to this position, we got a force named the configurational force that, when is non-null, provides a motion of the defects within the solid towards an equilibrium configuration of the defects. So through the years, this configurational mechanics framework has been exploited in solid mechanics for the explanation of Kirk advance in fracture mechanics, or the motion of dislocation and phase boundaries. So we have exploited this concept in the structural mechanics framework by introducing this specific constraint that is called the sliding sleeve, realized as the as two rigid blocks, frictionless, may put in contact with an elastic rod, in our case inextensible, and this rod has a sort of configurational parameter, so that we have one length and one other, for example this. So this may change, and then we have a sort of configurational parameter of this system. The most interesting thing is that this constraint provides a non-null reaction along the tangential, along the sliding direction, and this reaction is equal to m squared divided 2b, where m is the bending moment at the clamp and b is the bending stiffness of the rod. So we have theoretically proven this reaction, this unexpected reaction, through a variational approach by considering the total potential energy and by taking perturbation with respect to an equilibrium configuration. And the annihilation of the first variation provides the nonlinear elastic equation in the rotation field theta, plus an equilibrium equation along the sliding direction, where p cosine alpha, the component of p along the sliding direction, appears with the sum of s, this other force along the sliding direction on the left and the side, that has to be equal to m squared divided 2b, where m is the bending moment and is related through the linear constitutive equation to the rotation field as theta prime, that is the curvature. So another way to obtain the same result is to consider now that the two rigid blocks are not in contact, in perfect contact, but there is a small amount of a gap. So we have two contact reactions that are developing, and then we can consider the decrease of this gap. With the decrease, we got the fact that this vertical component approaches the sliding sleeve exit, so this force moves from left to the right, and these inclined components tend to become vertical. The point is that when delta approaches zero, these two reaction forces in their magnitude approach infinity, and the horizontal component of r, given as r sine of theta, becomes a finite value, that is the same value we obtained through the variational approach. So this is an experimental qualitative validation of this equilibrium, where the vertical load provided by these two weights is balanced by the configurational force developed by this experimental realization of the sliding sleeve. So after a few years, we were wondering if this concept of configurational force could have been exploited within a dynamic framework. And then we have enhanced the elastic rod with an attached mass. And we consider this system within a gravitational field. And then the fields are now a function also of the time. So we have the rotation field that is a function of the curvilinear coordinate S and the configurational parameter L. We may build up the Lagrangian, given as the difference between the kinetic and the potential energy, plus we have some effect of the Lagrangian multipliers because we are considering an inextensible rod. And through the principle of least action, we obtain the governing equation on the two parts of the rod, plus the boundary condition. And more interestingly, we obtain the interfacial condition at the sliding sleeve exit, confirming the results I just showed a few slides ago for the quasi-static case. So also in the dynamic case, we obtain the same expression. So we may now attempt to solve an evolutive problem. However, it is a bit tricky because in addition to have a non-linear system of partial differential equation, we have also the presence of moving boundary. So we will try to solve it under some simplificative assumption. And the main assumption here is to neglect the rod's inertia, so that we have the rod has a spatially constant internal force, and this allows us to perform independent integration space and time, and the integration in space is governed by these elliptic integrals. Then we can just numerically integrate a differential algebraic system of equation that remains, where we have two differential equations, namely the two equation of motion along the two direction in the plane, plus the interfacial condition at the sliding sleeve exit. So here is the system enhanced by some dissipative effects in terms of linear damping and some Coulomb friction. We consider the dimensionless form of this system. And then these three equations have to be solved numerically in terms of these three fundamental unknowns that are the length of the part of rod outside the sliding sleeve, plus the rotation at the hand where the mass is attached, and beta, that is the inclination of the resultant applied at that end. So fixing the two ratios of dissipation, we just have as other parameters the sliding sleeve inclination, that is this quantity, and with respect to the gravity direction, and the dimensionless load that condenses itself, the mass, the gravity acceleration, the initial length of the rod divided the bending stiffness. So we numerically integrate through Mathematica, and for the same condition of sliding sleeve inclination and dissipation ratios, we just consider two dimensionless load which varies each other for the fourth floating number. So a very small variation between these two cases. What we can observe is that the initial dynamics is basically the same, but eventually the left case, the case with less load, finally injects, and the right case has a final ejection of the rod. So our guess may be that there is a threshold, a transition load value, below which we have the final injection of the rod, above which we have the final ejection of the rod. And this is confirmed by the numerical integration produced iteratively for different pairs of the dimensionless load and the sliding sleeve inclination. So we have produced this curve defining the transition load, below which we have injection pairs, and above which we have pairs providing the final injection of the system. So we also have validated these theoretical results experimentally. So here we have the practical realization of the sliding sleeve obtained through several pairs of rollers. Here we have the releasing mechanism triggered by this device, and then we tested different rods with different legs realized by polycarbonate and carbon fiber, the former reported with circles and the latter reported with stars. And with green we have the injected final stages, and in red the ejected final stages, confirming the theoretical predictions. And here just the trajectories of the lumped mass for different cases. The first line is for a sliding sleeve inclination 30 degrees, the second 45 degrees. The left column for loads lower than the transition value, and the right column for loads larger than the transition value. So we may attempt to exploit this feature within a periodic system. So we have developed with the MOV chance present here, and with Domenico, a postdoc now currently in Zurich, the analysis of the dynamic properties of this periodic system. In particular, we have that the periodic system is realized through the repetition of a unit cell composed by two substructures, A, red, and B, green, where the two substructures are characterized by constant properties in terms of density, area, second moment of area, and Young modulus. So the objective here is to analyze this periodic system subject to specific periodic arrangement of constraints under the longitudinal U motion and the transverse V motion. So here is the periodic arrangement of the sliding sleeves that we are considering. We have a structural system zero where the sliding sleeve fully contain the periodic system, so we may have only longitudinal motion. Then we have system one and two where central parts of substructure B or A and B is released by the sliding sleeve, so that we may have transverse motion in these parts. So it's instrumental to define some subset of coordinates. And we will focus in the following to the analysis of this system, because the analysis of this system also can be exploited to analyze the other two systems by fixing the transverse motion in some of the substructures that is null. So the analysis is pretty standard for some aspect, and I just highlighting here the aspects. So the we are analyzing small amplitude vibration under null external force. So we have a system of linear partial differential equation that are uncoupled. So we have the longitudinal motion that is uncoupled by uncoupled from the transverse motion. C is the longitudinal wave speed, R is the radius of gyration. Then we have some boundary condition, but also these are pretty standard. We have a null displacement condition for the parts of road constrained by this sliding sleeve. We have continuity of longitudinal displacement for these subsets of points. And then we have continuity of internal axial force at the substructure interface. And then we have the non-standard part, that is the influence of the sliding sleeve, providing a balance of the jumping internal axial force in terms of the configurational force that is rewritten here as Ra squared divided to V second square, where this V plays the role of curvature, namely is the same factor that we have here, made dimensionless. So this is the intriguing part, because this non-standard condition provides non-linearity in the problem. So the non-linearity comes not from the equation, the differential equation, but the boundary condition, but from the boundary condition. And then we have also coupling between the longitudinal and transverse displacement. And this coupling is weak because the transverse displacement, transverse oscillation goes by itself, and the longitudinal instead is coupled to the transverse one. For this reason, we will say that the longitudinal oscillation are nested into the transverse one. So the technique to solve the problem is to consider, as usually, the separation of a variable. So we have a function in space multiplying a function in time. So the two partial differential equation provides four ordinary differential equation, two in time and two in space, where we have a known frequency in the longitudinal and in the transverse oscillation. Plus, we can solve the spatial behavior in terms of the usual kernel, so sine, cosine, sine, cosine, hyperbolic sine and cosine, where we have this beta connected to omega through this formula. And here arises unknown amplitudes. So how to solve the problem? Well, we first solve the transverse oscillation. So the transverse oscillation can be solved as for the classical clamp-clamp system. So we obtain the transverse frequency from this constraint, and also the transverse amplitude is defined similarly. And then, involving the axial balance due to the configurational force, we obtain a relation between the longitudinal frequency, small omega, to the transverse frequency that has to be twice. So, moreover, if we have both substructure A and B that are simultaneously oscillating, we have also an internal constraint, a geometric constraint, in order to get some oscillation. But this is just a detail. So we now focus to nested block Fluke analysis. So we introduce a phase angle, and we are looking for quasi-periodic oscillations. So the resolution of the entire motion of our structure, so involving infinite amplitudes, just reduces to four amplitudes in the longitudinal behavior that are linearly related to the square of the flexural amplitude. So we have this matrix M, where all the characteristics of the substructures are involved. And now the point is that what happens if this determinant vanishes? Of course, we just simplify some value, and we consider that the two substructures now are varying each other for the Young modulus. And if we consider the system zero, allowing only for the longitudinal vibration, we have that the annihilation of this matrix provides this condition, that is the only condition for which the longitudinal wave may propagate, and provides this usual pass band and stop band response that we usually obtain from a periodic system. So we have regions of omega for which the longitudinal wave can propagate, but there are also regions, namely the band gap, for which the longitudinal wave cannot propagate. What changes if now we have also some transverse oscillation? Well, now we may have to invert this linear problem, so we have to involve the inverse of the matrix M, so that we may have two possible cases. The cases when we are considering some longitudinal frequency belonging to the band gap of the system I just shown you before, so that in this case we have that M is always non-singular. And this is an interesting case because longitudinal oscillation for the system zero that were forbidden are no longer forbidden for this system when transverse oscillation are provided. And the other case is also intriguing because we have the dimensionless frequency for which this matrix has a null determinant for some value. And this case provide a finite amplitude in a flexural behavior, providing an infinite amplitude in the axial behavior. And this is summarized in this final plot, where we have the band gap structure reported along this plane, the horizontal plane, and on the vertical plane we are reporting for different mode pairs along the two substructure transversely oscillating, the amplitude in the longitudinal direction. So we may see that when the plane encounters the phase diagram of the system zero, we have a sort of resonance. On the other hand, we have the possibility of longitudinal waves nested into flexural waves when we are within a stop band. Thank you.
Didn't you met the very old remote study related problem where a thin rod well contained in a curved cube and uniform problem? It jumps, you know, from this tube under configuration forces.
Oh. Was it in the Fedosyev book? Because I remember something like that with some instability problem.
That I saw
somewhere,
but I didn't know where it is published. But it was about 50 years ago. So, but remarkable, you know, phenomenon.
Thank you.
Cork.
Mm-hmm.
See? And it goes. If a little bit of this rod were outside, it was sufficient to go.
To go out, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yeah, I'll ask a question. So your configurational forces are due to presence of sharp corners.
Yeah.
So if you round the corners, what will happen with configurational forces?
You will have no longer a concentrated force, but you will have, assuming a frictionless contact, you will have a sort of distributed reaction force, and all of this will provide a component along this direction.
So they will stop being configurational, they will become your normal forces.
Yeah, somehow, yes, forces. Yes.
I mean, it's just an abstraction due to the presence of the infinite curvature.
Yes. It's a sort of limit representation.
Okay. Yes. It's maybe unrelated. If you do up a screw with a screwdriver, it's very noticeable there's a very strong force out.
Yeah.
That does seem to be, in my observation, genuine force. And is that a configuration force? Because it seems basically the same mechanism, but in torque rather than...
Yeah, indeed, we have investigated this behavior under torque a few years ago, and we have considered a piecewise constant rod. So we have here one torsional rigidity and here one other, and we consider two pairs of rollers. Then we apply... Then we apply some torque here and here, for example, the opposite, and we observe that there is motion because the stiffer parts wants to release energy, and this can be done because this is softer. So we have defined this as torsional locomotion. So from torque we provide axial motion. And this is very related to the problem.
It depends on the different stiffness between the screwdriver and the screw.
Yeah.
Why don't you show the movie of this pen? Yeah. You'll see in a moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You think it's yourself doing it wrong.
It doesn't matter energy by torsion or by bending.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank our speaker again.
Thank you.